We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, Knicks fans? Hopefully by now you've heard about T-Squared Social, your new home for Knicks Film School watch parties. The next one on Sunday, April 28th for Game 4 of the Knicks' first round series against the Sixers. Founded by Tiger Woods and Justin Timberlake, this place has everything for a sports fan. Watch the entire Knicks, Rangers, and Islanders playoff runs or other sporting events like the Red Hot Mets and Yankees or other NBA playoff games. T-Squared also wants you to know that even when KFS isn't there, you could still join them to watch all Knicks playoff games from a private viewing area that features the largest screen in New York City, or reserve a table, grab a drink, and order a delicious meal while surrounded by their several dozen TV screens. Take this Thursday, for example. The Knicks play Game 3, the Yankees play the Athletics, the Islanders play the Hurricanes, and it's the NFL Draft. If you're a Knicks fan but also want to multitask, T-Squared will make sure you don't miss a meaningful minute of the action. T-Squared Social, your number one place to watch the next big Knicks game. Get a free draft beer when you tell them Knicks Film School sent you. Visit tsquaredsocial.com for more information.
We're back with another edition of New York Got Game. It is the playoffs. Playoffs have started already. Knicks won their first game in their series against the Sixers. So you know what time it is. Knicks fans are hyped. They're excited. They've been out in the streets outside of MSG. In fact, some people might be actually out waiting for Game 2 to start already. But we're going to get started on the coverage and previewing Game 2. And this week, to help me preview Game 2 as we move forward in this series, I've got a really special guest. Let's get right to it.
The Knicks are heating up.
It's always good to start a playoff series off with a win. If you're a Knicks fan, you got to feel good about your team's series opening win over the Sixers, because the Knickerbockers, they've won 8 consecutive series when they've won Game 1 of a playoff matchup. But now we're on to Game 2, which is Monday night at the world's most famous arena. And joining me to recap Game 1 and preview Game 2 is a great executive producer of Knicks Film School, my guy, Andrew Claudio. Andrew, what's up, man?
Dexter, thank you so much for having me.
I had to have you here. You know why? Because the vibes are good. It's always good after a Game 1 win. Mm-hmm. But you start looking ahead and you start thinking, what happens next? How are we going to close out this series? How is this all going to happen? How are you feeling after we'll get into the Game 1 win, but how are you feeling personally? Because I know you had a busy time. You guys had a watch party. Knicks Film School at T-Squared.
We did.
How are you feeling?
Yeah. Apologies for my voice if you can't hear how I'm feeling from the sound of me, but I just, the roller coaster of the game, the ebbs and flows of a playoff game, the Sixers get off to a big start, the Knicks storm back in the second, then the Sixers retake the lead, and then obviously the fourth quarter went. It's the emotional up and down of a playoff game, and it's good that our team came out on top.
It's good that the Knicks came out on top. I know a lot of Knicks fans are happy about that, but here's what we're going to start with. We're going to get right into it with this, Andrew. 111-104 win, Game 1 at the Garden. What were your overall impressions of the Knicks' performance in Game 1 against the Sixers? Because it was a lot of what you just talked about. It was a roller coaster ride. It was up and down. What were your overall impressions of how the team played?
So imagine if I told you going into this series that there would be a game in which the entire starting five would have a negative plus minus. OG Anunoby, who hasn't had a negative plus minus since coming here, would be a minus. And they would win the non-Brunson minutes excessively. And they would win that basketball game. And that's really the story for me, is that the Knicks were able to survive this game. And I don't want to say escape, or survive might even be too strong. They were able to get this W and take it without really getting anything, or a subpar performance from their best player in Jalen Brunson. I thought the game plan that Nurse had for him was good, and the Knicks were still able to come out on top. A lot of good, I'll say. 23 offensive rebounds, hitting your three-pointers, 16 threes in this game. They were able to take it. I mean, Josh Hart, honestly, they were obvious ignoring him for most of the game, and then he finally started to hit shots and take advantage of being wide open. And look, just to go back to the rebounding, the Sixers are a bottom five defensive rebounding team, the Knicks obviously being the best offensive rebounding team in the NBA. Winning that possession battle, it's not really quantifiable when you say that it takes the heart out of another team, pun intended. But when you're just consistently getting every miss turning into another possession for your team, it suddenly takes the life out of the other team. And I thought that's what you started to see in that fourth quarter.
Yeah, that is deflating for another team when the other team is just constantly getting possessions. I thought, immediately looking at this game, if you're a Knicks fan and you saw the way Jalen Brunson didn't shoot the ball well in this one, which we'll get to, you're thinking to yourself, okay, best player's not having the greatest game here, right? Subpar was the word you use. We're going to lose this game.
Yeah.
I think a lot of fans feel like that, and it shows a lot about, I think, the resiliency, grit, toughness of the team, these words we've been using around the Knicks all season. They're all shown in this game one. Now, you talked about the starters, negative point differential, negative plus minus, OG Anunoby, all that stuff. The Knicks bench, crucial role in this victory, especially, guys, the trio of Mitchell Robinson, Miles McBride, Bojan Bogdanović, they were huge. Here's my question to you, Andrew. Which reserve stood out most to you in game one and you think will actually be integral in the series moving forward?
With respect to Bojan Bogdanović, who I think has started to really justify the trade in the last, really the last 2-3 weeks of the season, he got comfortable. Good job on Tibbs putting him in those bogey lineups, those bogey and OG lineups, I should say. And also with respect to Mitchell Robinson, it's good to have you back, and it's a good reminder of what we saw from playoff Mitch like last year. The revelation that continues to be Deuce McBride and his hot shooting, like you and I are both big Emmanuel Quickley guys, and this is not a shot at Emmanuel Quickley. I think he's going to have a great career in Toronto. But we saw what deer in the headlights looks like last year in the playoffs. And for Deuce, when your team is down double figures to get checked into the game, get the Tyrese Maxey assignment, hit your first 4 3-pointers, and completely flip the script and the momentum in the game and potentially the series, it's one of the more important role player performances, I think, in Knicks history, if you really want to go that far. Depending on how the rest of the series goes, obviously the rest of the run is going to have to play out, but there's a chance. Like, I went on a Philly podcast in prep for this week and for this series, and I gave a hot take because this is how much I believe in this kid. I was like, there will be a Deuce McBride game. I didn't think it would be game one, but I was like, Right. You'll be sitting there watching it happen. Like, Andrew warned me about the Deuce McBride game. And he just continues to play with this level of confidence in his shooting and on the defensive end. We may be looking at the Deuce McBride series if this continues.
Well, look, if there's a Deuce McBride series, that means things are going very, very well for the New York Knicks, right? And I think it does matter when you talk about the role players, because heading into game one, I spoke with Stephen Bondi about this, and he said, look, you never know, guys who haven't been in this moment. Deuce McBride has not. I know he played a little bit in the playoffs last year, but those were not these minutes that he's playing now. You never know how these guys are going to play. For him to come out and shoot the way he did, Andrew, play the defense that we know he's capable of, not look to be deterred by the moment at all whatsoever, it is very impressive. I happen to agree with you. I think he was the most impressive reserve that we saw.
And look, with respect to Mitchell Robinson, I thought Embiid gave Hartenstein some trouble. Even a compromised Embiid is something difficult to deal with.
Yes.
But I thought Mitch just completely flipped the script when he came in the second, and really in the first, but really that second quarter when Embiid came back in. And there was a clear... It's the healthiest he's looked, obviously, but there was a clear uptick in their intensity on stopping Embiid. Now, there's no full stopping Joel Embiid, especially a healthy one. Those first 5 minutes where he scored 9 points, it was wondering if we were headed for the Embiid series. But I thought Mitch did a great job playing defense with his feet, avoiding fouls as much as he could. And look, if that's the center play we're going to get in this series, where you're getting an elite offensive hub with a good defensive center in Hartenstein, and you get the Mitch from last year that's a possession battle monster, then the Knicks are in great shape, like you said.
Yeah, could be. Centers played very well, particularly Mitchell Robinson, who got most of the minutes down the stretch at that five position. Got to also talk about Jalen Brunson, guys, because he struggled with his shooting in game one. any concerns for you about Brunson's 8-for-26 performance in game one? And how do you think he should adjust to the Sixers' defense in game two? Was his performance that we saw with him shooting, was that even about the Sixers' defense or just a bad shooting night for Jalen Brunson?
So I'll say this. Jalen Brunson has shot under 31% for a game 11 different times this year. Three of those times were against the Philadelphia 76ers, one of which was last night. They just seem to be a bad matchup for him. Kelly Oubre may not seem like a defensive mastermind or a stopper, but his length and how much that type of the length bothers JB, who's a smaller guard. And well, look, JB can, of course, go off. JB, like I know him. Jalen Brunson can go off on anybody in this league, any defender. But I think they've given him struggles and problems all season by bothering him, by him not being able to take advantage of smaller guards. I thought Nick Batum did decent when covering him. Kyle Lowry, just as a pest, was a problem. And look, say what you want about Tyrese Maxey and how you may think the Knicks can pick on him in this series. I thought he held his own. Now, what I did for you this morning, Dexter Henry, was I went back and rewatched all 26 of his shots. This is a man that shot over 50% in the paint this season and shot 3 of 10 on those bunnies that he likes to take with when he's getting to the paint. If that's a 6 for 10, 7 for 10 game from him, which he might get in game two, then you're looking at like a 30-point performance but on 26 shots. So it's not super efficient, but I do think there were some shots that he normally makes that he misses. I also do think that Philly does provide some problems for him. And, you know, there are some ways that he can just make the shots that he normally make the shots that he normally does in this series. And I'm sure there will be another question that comes that maybe some adjustments to make his life a little easier.
Yes, because the playoffs are about adjustments. Yeah. We'll get to that. I will say I do appreciate you doing your homework.
Of course.
And going back and looking at those 26 shots, Andrew's trying to let the people know if you come up here, do your homework, please. Yes. Not that anybody has it. Not saying that. I'm just saying that's probably something you should do.
Especially for Knicks film school.
Yes. If you know what? It would be not right with your brand. Mm-hmm. Of Knicks Film School if you weren't looking at the film.
Exactly.
So there we go. I like it. I like that there. Andrew, you just mentioned the word adjustments. And we know this. When it comes to playoff series, it's all about adjustments from game to game, quarter to quarter, possession to possession. Based on game one and what you saw, how do you think the 76ers will adjust their game plan for the next matchup in game two?
I mean, it depends what you believe from Nick Nurse. He was on record today to the Philly media in one of the scrums that he may consider a Paul Reed, Joel Embiid lineup in game two because they're just tired of getting beat up on the boards. I actually don't know how real that is. And I got to be honest, I'd be surprised if they don't just go with the same Josh Hart game plan of leave him open. And if he hits him, you live with him. You're going to want to try and take something away, especially if you're gearing up to try and stop Jalen Brunson. But Josh Hart made him pay last night. And I would assume that Nick Nurse is okay with, like, the process was good. Josh Hart beat us. Like, if Josh Hart beats us this series, I can walk away being okay with that. Now, Josh Hart goes 2 of 8. Like, you'll live with him taking 8 three-pointers if you're Philly. Now, he went 4 of 8 last night. Obviously, he hit the 3 biggest threes of his season in the fourth quarter. I do think that's going to be a similar game plan. They're going to sag off of Josh Hart, leave him open, try to play 4-on-5, have whoever his man is help as much as possible. We saw that a lot from Lowry. We saw that a lot from when Embiid was on Josh Hart. Just kind of navigate the paint whenever Jalen Brunson.
I feel like you know
my good friend, Jalen Brunson.
Now you know Jalen Brunson.
My fellow podcaster, Jalen Brunson.
Twice, JB.
Whenever Brunson tries to get into the paint and get to the rim, they're helping as much as possible. It's similar to what Miami did. And I think they'll go with the same game plan because this was a close game in the final minutes. I do think it's interesting that the rebounding advantage that the Knicks have is already in their heads. I do believe that's a thing because I thought you saw it start to wear on them that we're not just trying to get one stop every possession. We're getting 2 and 3 and 4 stops, and that's the Josh Hart advantage that he creates as well.
That is the impact that he creates as well. Okay, we'll see what the Sixers do. But even though the Knicks won, guys, it doesn't mean that they are not going to make adjustments. So on the other side, what adjustments do you expect the Knicks to make going into game two?
So I thought Tibbs had an overall pretty good game. I like that he stuck with that lineup that was that got him back in the game, where he put Bogey in, he put Mitch in, obviously Deuce McBride, and he just kind of rode that for the entirety of the second quarter. And then I thought he could have gone back to that lineup a little sooner in the third. We'll see how, you know, that starting five that I personally love, but what it looks like in game two against the Sixers starters. There's two minor adjustments that I do think will make a big difference. They both center around Josh Hart. The first one is, and I'm a big Josh Hart defender, it seems, especially with my colleagues at Knicks Film School. The first one is to get him more involved in some DHO, you know, treat him like Draymond Green, bring him to the screen so that way whoever switches onto Jalen Brunson, or if you double him, then you have Josh Hart in a 4-on-3. We saw how well that worked during the season. If you get him going downhill, that's obviously one of his best traits, is getting, you know, that left to right layup that he always makes. And if they leave him open, I mean, you have to live with the wide open Josh Hart three, which he has shown he has been able to make in some series. So I would just get him more involved in the screens that you're using to try and get Jalen Brunson open. The other thing, and look, again, Josh Hart defender over here. I do think he is a positive player. I want him closing every game. I love the man and what he's brought to this city. Played 42 minutes last night. If that's 35 and you could go with an actual shooter at that spot, maybe OG Anunoby at the four, maybe you go to Bogey at the four, OG at the three, maybe you go to a smaller lineup and put Devo at the three and put Deuce McBride at the two. You know, it makes them guard all five players on the floor,
right,
which we didn't see them do much in game one. So, look, again, this is not an anti-Josh Hart conversation. This is very much a make life easier for Jalen Brunson situation, because if they can't sag off of that guy in the corner and JB can... You know, he's just JB from
your I see that.
JB is able to just get to the rim without somebody always jumping in the paint or hedging, then maybe he's not going to need to be as excellent as he's always, especially with more room to operate.
I like both of your adjustments there. Particularly, I want to go to the first one, because the first one you're talking about getting some help mm-hmm. for Jalen Brunson and having Josh Hart, which, as you mentioned, fantastic in those 4-on-3 situations and has been a pretty good decision maker mm-hmm. with that, especially if he gets that at the top of the key and then decides to go, whether he's going to pass, shoot, or try to drive and finish. He's been pretty good with that. I think that will help, too. I do wonder what the situations would be where the Knicks would then want to go to your second point in adjustment, where they'd want to get more shooting on the floor. Is this a case of when they're playing from behind or ahead? What do you think is best for that? Do you want more shooting on the floor when you're behind or ahead? I think it's a pretty good follow-up for this, but it's something I thought about as you were saying. What situation would call for that to maybe take Josh Hart off the floor, maybe go a little smaller with Dante or put OG at the three?
So the irony, I actually think when you're losing, you need Josh Hart even more so, because you're guaranteeing yourself possessions as much as possible. We've seen them in certain situations, sometimes with Hart off the floor, where the reason they can't get back into games when they're shooting poorly is because they're also getting killed on the boards. Hart being the rebounding weapon that he is, as well as the transition weapon that he is, so that way you can, and this is what I've loved about what this lineup has done with Josh Hart, is the moment the other team misses, they're running off of every miss, which obviously the Knicks outscored the Sixers, I believe, 14-6 last night in transition.
Transition points.
Mm-hmm. So like that advantage that creates. If you're winning, I mean, you probably want your best defensive lineup out there. So my adjustment, I guess, isn't even conditioned upon what the score is. It's very much just Jalen Brunson, for the majority, if not all of the minutes he played last night, was seeing an extra man coming into the action on every drive because of how the Sixers were ignoring Josh Hart. And I just want like an extra 4 or 5 minutes where his life is a little easier, because then maybe he'll be even more efficient with that room to operate.
That's fair. That makes a ton of sense to me. So we'll see if those are some adjustments. I'm sure the coaching staff has talked about some of
course.
This stuff.
Yeah.
But again, you see what happens when you do your homework at Knicks Film School? You see what happens? You get some good analysis there.
What's up, Knicks fans? You know, the other day I was talking to two girls who were telling me how into foreplay they are and how they wish they had more single guys to do it with. No, not that foreplay.
We're not looking to get teed up on the pod. I'm talking FOURPLAY foreplay. It's an app where single friends team up and double date other single friends. It's a more fun, lower pressure, and safer way to meet new people, which is exactly why single girls love it. In fact, they love it so much that they make up the majority of teams on the app, as in a 3-to-1 ratio in your favor. Back when I was single, I would have definitely loved this. Look, we all know everything is better with a friend. Just ask Josh and Jalen, even if Brunson won't admit it. And with foreplay, you don't have to sacrifice bromance for romance, because it's a chance to enjoy a night out with a buddy while meeting two new people in a more social environment without any expectation. And the icing on the cake, it's totally free. All right, it's game time. So head over to the App Store now and download foreplay, FOURPLAY, and get ready for a little 2-on-2 pickup.
What's up, Knicks fans? Quick break to tell you about our new sponsor, Unified. Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of the Knicks Film School podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovated global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System. And if you haven't heard of the EE system yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in the Big Apple or at hundreds of other locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE system technology for yourself? Don't hesitate. Go to unifiedhealing.com/KFS to learn more and find a center near you. Again, that's unifiedhealing.com/KFS. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
I want to talk about Tyrese Maxey because, look, Andrew, he got his in game one, right? Scored a game-high 33 points, was able to get to the rim quite often. What can the Knicks do in order to do a better job of, and I'm not going to say stop Maxey because that's not going to happen, slowing him down and staying in front of him? What do you think the Knicks can do to make some adjustments to do a better job of staying in front of Tyrese Maxey?
So this is honestly the biggest challenge I thought they would have, other than Joel Embiid regaining MVP form, right? But going into this series, that 1-5 pick and roll that Maxey and Embiid have has just been unstoppable all season. The Sixers are 31-8 when Embiid plays. The majority of that was when Maxey plays. I forget the net rating, but it's something astronomical whenever both of them are on the floor. And look, I thought the most success the Knicks had in this game, obviously we watched it together, was when Deuce McBride was on the floor. I don't think he necessarily is a Maxey stopper, as you mentioned. I think he more slows him down and makes him work to get downhill. I think the thing I liked the most was when Tibbs had the Mitch at the five and OG not guarding Maxey one-on-one, because, and we saw this during the regular season too in one of the matchups, when Deuce is guarding, or even DiVincenzo, which I think would be the adjustment I'd make, I'd put DiVincenzo on Maxey. And then with OG Anunoby able to roam and go, like, let's say you put him on Tobias Harris or Nick Batum or Kelly Oubre, right? Then you can treat all three of those role players I mentioned like Josh Hart and have OG Anunoby make life difficult and hedge and help and just, like, if Tobias Harris, who's been, I mean, ask a Philly fan, like, he's been awful for most of the season.
I'll tell you that.
Kelly Oubre is shooting 30% from three and is just not confident in his shot at the moment. If you kind of flip the script on what they're doing to you and do it to them, I do think it can help, with no pun intended, help on Maxey. He's a great player. I thought there was a point in that third quarter that even when Deuce checked in, it was like, oh, he's getting to the rim no matter what. And the majority of his points last night was at the rim. So there's not much you can do to fully stop him. It's quite literally about slowing one of the fastest players in the NBA down.
Yeah, he is. I do think an interesting point there with OG is more of that in that helper role
for
on
safety.
Defense.
Yeah.
For safety, and he could sag off other guys. I think that's a good thing for fans to watch out for in game two. Now, in this series opener, Joel Embiid, who there was a lot of talk about him coming into this, how healthy is he going to be? Can he regain his MVP's form? Scored 28 points, grabbed 8 rebounds, but shot 8 for 22. So was not incredibly efficient. What did you make of how the Knicks defended Philly center, and should they stick to the script of what they were doing on Joel Embiid in game two?
I mean, look, it's the number one question about this series as far as the variance of how it could go. In all my predictions of this series, I started every conversation with, like, how healthy is Joel Embiid? After his T-Mac impersonation where he threw the ball off the backboard, he clearly looked compromised in the second half. And you mentioned his stat line, and he did have the 29 points on 22 shots, which is, I mean, 8 of 22, he got to the line a ton, which is what Joel Embiid does. He had 15 points in the first quarter, and the rest of the game made 3 field goals. So the Knicks did their very best to slow him down. This version of him, with Mitchell Robinson, with OG in help, with, honestly, Mitch did a pretty good job one-on-one. And like the majority, like Embiid was 0 of 5 in the fourth quarter, and all his points came off of free throws. If you could stay in front of him, and that's why I thought Mitch did a good job staying on his feet. And if this Embiid is the version we saw against Miami, the one that didn't have a dunk during his final 8 regular season games, and then lo and behold, he gets to the Knicks, and the one dunk he finally tries is the one that got him potentially injured. Look, there's no stopping the borderline Wilt Chamberlain point per possession version that we saw for the first 3 months of the season. I just will not believe until I see it that version is coming back, especially over the course of a 7-game series against a very physical Knicks team. And it's why I think just the Knicks and their toughness and the big bodies they could throw at him will not stop him, but slow him down.
Yeah, and they do have the big bodies there with Mitchell Robinson, Isaiah Hartenstein, who did a pretty good job, especially when you look at the 8 of 22. You do bring a good point. We know Embiid always gets to the line, probably will get a bunch more. It's just, can you keep that field goal percentage low? And you made another point, 3 field goals after the first quarter, none in the fourth quarter.
None.
For Joel Embiid. All right, so here's the thing. Knicks win. I know you saw the videos of people outside Madison Square Garden after game one. The vibes were good.
My people.
Yes, yeah. The vibes were good after game one. And you know, fans, team, you want to keep the good vibes going. How important is maintaining momentum for the Knicks in this series? And what is momentum when you look at this, right? Because it's like, all right, you had the good vibes, you played well in game one, but what is the momentum? What is actually transferable that you carry over to game two?
So what's funny about this question is obviously the Knicks have the momentum at the moment with a game one victory, and there's some things they can clean up. Sixers win game two, we're back to an even series, and one team's lost the home game, right? So the old cliche, a series doesn't begin until a road team wins one of the games. So games two is important for the Knicks, and obviously you want to go up 2-0 and really command this series. I'm actually going to flip it and say that game one was so much more devastating for Philly to lose that game. You know, when you have a game like that where you were up double figures and I thought they forced Embiid to go back into the game in the second half thinking, let's steal game one. We can sit him game two. You have four days total to rest him before game three. It's literally what the Miami Heat did last year in game one against the Knicks. They stole that game. Jimmy sat game two. If you remember, that was during the series where game two was a Tuesday. And game three was a Saturday. So they had a full 4 days off. He was able to take an entire week off to rest that ankle. And I thought Philly had the thought process of, let's get this game one win. Let's try to steal home court. Embiid sits game two. If the Knicks win, they could win by 100 if you'd like to. But then we have home court, and Embiid has an extra couple days to rest. Now they have to play 48 hours later, down 0-1. He has to play if they want to have a chance of winning this series. And yeah, I thought it was just so much more of a momentum blow for them that they didn't steal game one and potentially like put themselves in a good advantage in this series. And it's why I think it's the most must-win games for Philly that they can't lose game two.
I do think it's a must-win for them, and disappointing in the fact that not only did they have the early lead, Andrew, also, like we talked about before, Jalen Brunson, your boy JB, did not play particularly well. He had a subpar game, and you were not able to steal that game. If Jalen Brunson has a above-par game in this one, that could be a little troublesome for Philadelphia. Yeah. But this isn't Sixers film school. This is Knicks film school talking with here. A couple more things for you. There were some fans who were concerned coming into this matchup with the Sixers, right? That didn't think the Knicks should grab the second seed in the playoffs. They should have done what the Cavaliers did, which for the record, I think was pretty shameful. Don't agree with that at all. What is the vibe of the fan base after the game one victory, and have expectations changed? Because you know this. Mm-hmm. You've seen this during the regular season. Fans are high on a three-game winning streak. The Knicks lose two games. Oh, the sky is falling, right? They win game one. Everything is good. Have expectations changed? Because there were people who legitimately thought, fans who legitimately thought, and some media members too, that the Knicks should not try to go up against the Sixers. But here they are. Now they're up a game. Have the expectations shifted?
So there's two answers to that question. There's what we think as fans or analysts or media members.
Yep.
And there's what the team has thought all season long. And it's that there's no such thing as a challenge too great, circumstances too big to overcome. And it starts with the head coach. It starts with their superstar MVP candidate, my good friend JB. And it works its way through the roster. The Villanova boys, Hartenstein, Deuce McBride, even Bogey lately, Mitchell Robinson coming back. All of them, and Anobi, of course, like, they have this personality that, and we saw it the last game of the season, like, we're not ducking any smoke. Give me Philly, give me Miami, give me Boston. We know what our team is. We're going to give the best possible effort. And it's a personality that this city in particular has come to admire, because it's the type of personality that this city and now the people that live here feed off of. You know, the hard worker, the blue collar, you know, next man up attitude. And it's what I've always appreciated about this team. The fan side of things, look, to your point about the Cavaliers, losers lose. And if their thought process was like, let's go take on an easier Orlando team, survive this season with the notch in their belt that we won a playoff series, and maybe that means Donovan Mitchell will stay, good for them. My team has higher aspirations. My team has a tougher backbone. And I'm proud to say that they're a 2 seed and a 50-win team. And they were up for the challenge of taking on a very good Philadelphia team and potentially defeating a very good Philadelphia team to send a message to the rest of the NBA of what this team is all about.
Yeah, I think that matters. I like that. I think that you feel that way about them. I think the team has shown that. I think the points you made about the fact that this is what Tom Thibodeau has been about, this is what the organization's culture has been about, I think that all that stuff matters. And yes, I do think, I'll say again for the record, what the Cavs did, it's shameful. Losers lose. I'm with you. I think it's a loser's mentality. I even thought, even when I was talking about this with people who root for the Knicks, who are fans of the Knicks, I'm like, you got to win. You got to go and try to win. You want to win this series. You want to compete. Somewhere along your run, if you're trying to have a long playoff run, you're going to play against other really good teams. Mm-hmm. Sixers are a really good team. The Knicks had to play them early. It is what it is, but you got to compete. So I'm with you. Expectations shouldn't shift. Now you're here. Now you want to win.
Bingo.
Right? Now, now you want to win. Okay, here we go. Last thing. Game two. Going down Monday night. What are your keys to the Knicks getting a victory in game two at the Garden on Monday night and taking a 2-0 series lead, which would be fantastic? Expectations would shift even more. Mm-hmm. The fans will be hyped. All the stuff will be good. The vibes will be great. What are the keys to the Knicks actually getting it done? And on Monday night, I'm doing what I'm doing at the Garden, doing some coverage. I pop on Knicks Film School, see what you and J-Mac are talking about. You guys are smiling, not in a bad mood. What are the keys to all that happening?
So, I mean, we talked about a little bit with some of the adjustments I'd like to see, putting some more spacing on the floor at certain times, bringing Josh Hart into the action. Those will be key. Make more shots. Like that's really the key. It's so simple, obviously, but there are some shots Jalen Brunson normally makes that he didn't. There's some shots Dante DiVincenzo normally makes that he didn't. This seems like a team they shot 42 threes on Saturday. That's going to be the game plan, is create as many open looks for three as they possibly can. And look, my hottest of hot takes that I can give you, again, it goes back to how demoralizing I believe that loss was for Philly. That's going to be a very desperate and somewhat old Philly team on the other side of the floor. I don't know if they're getting another burst like they did from Kyle Lowry, who's been very up and down in his stint in Philly since going there. Very important veteran, 16-game player. Like, I respect what he is as a winner and a champion. When he's that important to you competing in a playoff game, there's a version of my thought process that this series might already be over. And especially if Embiid can't regain the health that he had at the beginning of game one, really, those first 5 minutes. That guy comes back. This is a 7-game series, and I'm going to trust that the team with home court has a good chance to win. If Embiid looks compromised like he did in the second half, and the Knicks make some minor tweaks, and Jalen Brunson, my very best friend Jalen Brunson, hits more shots, I don't see how this Knicks team that is just solid 1-8 is going to lose. That's just my mentality on this.
I can appreciate that analysis, because I think sometimes we talk about stuff in basketball, we make it a little bit deeper than what it might be, right? Some of this comes down to getting stops, getting more possessions than the other team, and making more shots.
Yeah, the team,
right?
Yeah.
You make a little bit more shots. You know, Jalen Brunson makes some more shots. You talked about his percentage. The team overall hits some more shots. Maybe some other players. Maybe last night's victory in game one is a 14 to 15 point victory. Maybe it's a little more comfortable. The margins, the little things matter. Taking care of the ball, getting fast break points, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
All the stuff you guys talk about on Knicks Film School.
We try.
That is Andrew Claudio, the great executive producer for Knicks Film School, joining me here on New York Got Game. Your first time here on New York Got Game?
Yes, of course.
Glad to have you here and breaking down and previewing game two. Do you have a prediction for game two? We went through all the analysis. Do you have a prediction you're willing to say with your chest?
I'm very confident the Knicks are going to win on Monday night. I do think that there's a part of me that, again, the Embiid variable, that he comes out, looks great, and they're having to contend with a 45-point Embiid night. You respect an MVP for what he's able to do. I'm believing the version that I've seen for now 6 playoff quarters between the play-in and the second half on Saturday. So I'm going to believe that version exists, and I think the Knicks are in a very good spot to win a game against that team.
All right. Going with a Knicks win for game two. Game two going down Monday night at MSG. Andrew, again, thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
All right. We'll see what happens with the Knicks in game two.
The Knicks are on fire.
Well, comes to an end of another great episode of New York Got Game. Special thanks to my guest, Andrew Claudio, all the great work he does. It'll be an interesting week, because by the time we record next week, we'll have seen at least 3 more games for the Knicks in this playoff series happen. So will it be a Knicks sweep? Will it be over after game 4? We will find out. So stay tuned. But either way, we'll be back next week to break down more of this series, or maybe we'll actually be previewing the next series. We will see how it all plays out. Always got to thank the people that make this possible. My director, Zach Taub, producer, Lee Insler, editors, Catherine Cooper and Kelly Velez, and production assistant, Olivia Cilio. This is Dexter Henry. Thank you for joining me in another episode of New York Got Game.